to the fifth article to our Bill of Rights. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment of an indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to or for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of the law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. And we'll just start with the first clause here. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment of a indictment of a grand jury. And this isn't these secret indictments where the DA goes down and he brags about how he can get a hamburger indicted and, comes in and just tells the grand jury, I want this, I want that. That's no public official, no agent of the government can stand in a common law grand jury. The grand jury is called by the sheriff. After the complaint is registered with the court, that would be, you go to your common law judge and you would register your complaint along with your affidavits, and that would be what the grand jury would be looking to investigate, because there's the allegation and here's your witnesses. And then the sheriff then calls the grand jury and takes the information to the grand jury and then walks out the door because he has nothing to do with it from that point forward. The grand jury has full investigatory powers, including subpoena powers, to bring anyone before it that it would think would have relevant information to give that grand jury to come to a true bill or else a dismissal of the allegation. And this was one of the great protections of our Bill of Rights for our people. It's procedural due process. And when it talks about tell to answer except on presentment of indictment, before the indictment ever happens, the person's done went and fulfilled the fourth article obligation in presenting the complaint with the two witness rule, two witnesses to the same event. And then, like I said, if there is an arrest, there's already been an arraignment within 24 hours to set bail, and the person can either answer to the charge or, wait to see what the indictment is. But if you're being held within 72 hours, you're supposed to be in front of a judge, a common law judge, and there better be just cause for holding you. And there better be bail offered at that time, a reasonable bail that you can afford, not just because you're poor, make it $100,000, I guess you're staying in jail. Whereas these criminals at the upper end, they could commit mayhem, and it's $1 million bail, but seeing as he has $1 billion, $1 million ain't really no big deal, and he walks out the goddamn door. And this was not, and of course this is again the government in it, where the jurisdictions aren't there. The only jurisdiction that can compel an American national into a common law court is a complaint filled out properly and put into the court to move the court properly by an American national. No agent of the government come in and say, well, I'm an agent of the BLM, any of these, the Forest Service, any of these agencies that have taken on judicial powers through the expansion of the federal jurisdiction beyond the limits of the 10-mile barrier. They just can't do it. They have no standing in a common law court. Only an American national does, and it has to be for a crime, that committed against another American national that is being reported. Not reported. You are actually doing the prosecuting in the common law. You are exercising your jurisdiction as a free national of this country, and you are on a par with the crown heads of Europe. You can charge, you can prosecute people, you can prosecute for civil damages done to you or civil crimes done to you. When they started taking over after the War Powers Act, that was done clear back in 1913, but the removal of the common law courts didn't occur to much later on in the 70s, the late 70s, is when I seen the last of them go around here. And, of course, you'll all remember that, before that DA, he was there to help everybody, because the government, they want to help you. They're concerned about you, they love you, they care about you, and they care about your children. And they were there to prosecute your case for you. But they had to have, when they started stepping into the common law where they had no, where it was an act of treason, it was an act of sedition to step into the common law for it. There's no such thing as a district attorney. It cannot exist in the common law. That exists in the admiralty. It's a It's like when you're charged in the military, you get an officer of the military to represent you in that military court. And that's the DA, you know, he's acting as the prosecuting, I guess he'd be a captain, a colonel, whatever they would have to have for a board of inquiry for the military. But this is the capacity he was working in. But back in the 70s, when they were at their final stages of removing our common law courts, you'll remember they used to have what they call a complaint. And, you know, you filed your complaint, it had to be acted upon, and boy, it would. They were so anxious to help you because they care about you, because they love you, and they care about your children. They were so anxious to prosecute your case. But any time during the prosecution, I don't really give a shit what the charge was. The person who filed that charge, any time up until the verdict, could drop that charge, and it was over. The state couldn't, you know, that was one of the provisions. Let us be a district attorney. You'll still be in control because you control the complaint. We could never prosecute beyond the complaint. And then they came in with this notion of domestic violence. And domestic violence, you know, the woman, she's afraid to prosecute or what might have you. So they stepped up, and the state started picking up the charges. And this is when you were completely transformed over into the admiralty jurisdiction, because state can't prosecute you in a common law court, which you are guaranteed as an American national. In fact, we'll go on into this because it's some more self-explanatory on down the road here, on in the next clause, in fact. So we were at presentment of or indictment of a grand jury, except, and this is where we start talking jurisdictions again here. Except, there's only one exception to this first clause in the fifth article, and here it is, people. Except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, soldiers. When you become under a military command, you become under military law, which is what the admiralty is. But if you're not in the military, man, they can you. The common law is the only other jurisdiction that exists. Now, they claim they do all of these evil things that they perpetrate through the admiralty courts. Well, this is an administrative jurisdiction. There is no such thing. I challenge you to go into the Constitution and Bill of Rights, especially the Bill of Rights, since we're guaranteed the common law, and find me any mention of any administrative jurisdiction. Now, the administration and the government, it has jurisdictions within the government, within the admiralty, to prosecute within the government, government agents, because if you're a government agent, you're on the same par as a soldier. You've become an agent of the government, like the soldier. And so you are open to the admiralty. But if you're not a government agent and you're not a soldier, you are guaranteed the common law, and you're guaranteed that that government out there, that apparatus you created to take care of a few small matters that we couldn't take care of as a whole people, well, then they have no authority over you. They can't even talk to you. I mean, you can tell them to buzz off, go away. But you try that today under this totalitarian dictatorship we're living under, you'll end up dead. But we have to keep with reality, and we have to understand what our rights are if we're ever to enforce them. And we have to understand them well, and we have to be ready to assert ourselves in our common law courts. It's not difficult. Now, everybody probably wonders, you know, because I talk about the procedures contained within the Bill of Rights, and they are there. And, you know, when you're talking about the person being answered for a crime here is a procedure that's laid out for you in the fifth article. You have to get an indictment by a grand jury. How is that accomplished? Well, there has to be a procedure to accomplish that if you really want to take a person into court under the common law. That procedure would be the complainant going to the common law judge with the court setting neutral, filing the paperwork that would move that court, which would be a complaint with two affidavits attached. The judge would then look over to the sheriff, who is he's the constable, he is the process server for that court. And he would say, we have a complaint here with two affidavits attached. It's been affirmed. They've swore to it under penalty of perjury. See, this is why another reason they wanted to get rid of this, because back in the day, I mean, if you swore out a complaint with somebody and it was found out that it was a lie, ooh, you would be the one that would be punished. You would be the one in the catbird seat that's going to go and set some time in jail or pay some restitution to the person who you were trying to screw with using the law. At any rate, the indictment, the clause for the indictment would have to be, the procedure would be that the sheriff would then call together a grand jury. He'd just go out and get 12 people off the street and say, you're now a grand jury. You're going to investigate this complaint. Set you down. Here's the complaint. Y'all can read and write, because that's a, that would be something that you would insist upon to qualify to be on a grand jury. I'd want somebody that could read. But somebody, your average person that could read and interpret with an average intelligence and a knowledge of the Bill of Rights and what your rights are, and you know, the just right and wrong, would be able to read that indictment. He might see, I mean, he'd be able to read the complaint, and he'd look at that complaint and he goes, well, it mentions in this affidavit over here about Joe Bob, you know, saw that this blue car go by at 3 o'clock in the morning. We need to talk to Joe Bob and see if he did see that car and see if we can confirm any of these statements being made in these affidavits. So then you would, the foreman of the grand jury, which would be elected through a raise of hands, who's going to form in the jury, he would fill out a summons for Joe Blow, and you know, you'd come in and the sheriff would take that. This is more of the process. The sheriff would take that summons in the process, and he'd go over and hand it to Joe Blow and say, you've been called before the grand jury to answer questions in this case. And and Joe Blow would come in, because he's a good law-abiding citizen and everybody wants a just end to every action. He would come in and tell everything he knew, and by the time it was over, the grand jury would have investigated. Now, if they found that the standard for the grand jury, because the standard for convicting someone of a crime in the United States is beyond a reasonable doubt, or beyond the shadow of a doubt, they've said. But if they find that the way a grand jury is supposed to look at the information is, if this person who is being accused offered no defense whatsoever, could it be found that could the probable cause be found that a verdict of beyond a shadow of a doubt could be reached by a jury? And this would be their personal, it would come down to a personal opinion. Could I be convinced, not seeing the defense, that this person did this crime? And then if you could, if you thought that the person looked guilty without a defense, then you would return a true bill. You would sign it. The grand jury foreman would sign it as a true bill, and then you would. The next part of the procedure would be to call together a jury, and both sides examining the jury and getting a jury of the peers. And then the next part of the procedure, I mean, we're going to cover this again when we hit the Sixth Amendment, because these procedures are covered in the Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth Amendment. Again, the bail thing would come up. And the next part of the procedure would be, you know, setting a court date, and of course your rights to subpoena as under the Sixth Amendment. Let's again, we'll be hitting that at the time. But you, I mean, any witnesses you need to subpoena, you know, if you're defending yourself or if you're prosecuting the case, both parties have equal authority to subpoena records, to subpoena people, experts, whatever it would take to prove your case. And that part of the process would be fulfilled. And then there would be the jury trial, which would be the next part of the process. And the jury would hear the allegation, and they would hear the defense, and then they would go and they would deliberate, having heard all the facts, unhindered by some judge who is trying to make the verdict what he wants it to be, so he can stuff the coffers of his retirement plan, or maybe somebody's just got a beef with somebody that's one of the litigants and they want to get him. I mean, what we see today does not, it is not these courts, there's none. There are no common law courts operating. They'll fire one up for a day or two if they're trying to keep an illegal alien in here and try to give him your every right that you're denied by these charlatans posing as a government, which are completely without authority, as they have violated the Constitution, their work contract. Go ahead.
The judges actually get a kickback for every criminal conviction that they get that goes into their retirement fund. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh, yeah, the lion's share of the money that court takes in. It's like a pirate ship. And that's actually what they're doing, is pirating, because they're operating under the Admiralty, and they've come ashore with their supposed authority, which they do not have, because it's forbidden by the Bill of Rights. That's, I mean, the Bill of Rights was constructed to protect us, but we had to exercise it and we had to make it work. And then we go to, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice in jeopardy of life or limb. That means you get one shot at it. If you can't prove it, you don't you just keep coming back like the government does now under the admiralty in complete violation of the People's Bill of Rights and the government charging you in the first place without authority to do so. You're not in the military, and then charge you with 15 counts and just start trying them one at a time to eat out your substance. This was one of the things that occurred in jolly old England and in the European countries back in the day. This is one of the reasons that the people who came here to America came here to get away from this bullshit, because they could just wear you down. They have the total resource of the state, and they're coming at you with your own damn money because they're taxing you, and then they just, you know, keep bring it out for years. Look what they're doing to the Bundys. This right to a speedy trial. This is why you had a right to a speedy trial, and to get this over with, to get it out of your life, because you are upsetting the life of an American nation. By God, you better have cause, or you're going to be the one going to jail the way it's supposed to be. But of course, we know that's not the way it what we're seeing. And the Hammonds are, you know, here in Burns, Oregon, the original so-called cause for the Bundys are coming here to Burns, Oregon. The Hammonds are the ranching family out there. They had been convicted of an arson charge, which they obviously weren't guilty of. It was the BLM out there running roughshod over the people. But at any rate, they had served that time. Now, you think about it, they had served their time. They had gotten out of jail or prison or wherever in the hell they put them. And they're going on about their lives, and then here comes somebody from Fedland who has no jurisdiction out in Burns, Oregon, who is not supposed to be able to exercise any jurisdiction beyond where the water ebbs and flows and in that 10-mile square known as Washington, D.C., and just pops up. I'm a federal judge, and I've decided you need to do 5 more years. Man, I tell you, where's the... You talk about a loss of due process. You talk about a breakdown in the common law. Well, this isn't common law. That's why they can do that. It's admiralty. It's martial law. It's exactly what the King of England was doing to the people in the colonies when they decided, we better shoot this person out of here. We better get rid of him. He's here to enslave us, to make us his slaves. And that's what we're seeing today. There's no difference. I mean, when the law is twisted to compel performance from an American national through violation of the supreme law, which is the Bill of Rights, it's tyranny, plain and simple.
Henry?
Yes, sir.
Would you explain again about the bill? It's like I think a lot, it says a no bill grand jury or something like that.
When the issue goes before the grand jury, okay, they, like I said, they have the compulsory power. They can bring witnesses. They have subpoena power, and they're an investigative body. And when they're investigating the complaint, when they get through investigating the complaint, then the jury, because they are called a jury, because they are a jury, because they're going to make a decision. And what they have to weigh is if, with the evidence that they've looked at, if the defense, if there was no defense, if nobody put up a defense, could you convict within a shadow of a doubt? Could you convict if there was no defense, if you heard nothing else but the one side of it? And if they find that they can, then they return what is called a true bill. And then there's an indictment that that the respondent would have to answer, it's compulsory process again to protect you, so that bullshit people aren't doing bullshit things. That grand jury has power, and I mean, it can turn around and tell the jury, well, we need to investigate this complaint on the other end of it, because it looks like that this person here, this was just a malicious act to try to harm this person from what we found out. And if you need to let the person who was the respondent know that the grand jury has come back without a true bill, and it looks like this was something to try to cause him problems. And the very fact that they went in under the fourth article, because to get to the point that the grand jury was looking at it, they had to go in and swear out affidavits. It was purely to protect us. At any rate, if they cannot find enough evidence to convict without a defense, then they no bill. I can't think what they call it, but they will not return. There's no return of a bill of indictment. They can't return a bill, and the charges, whatever it is dismissed right there by the judge. And then the other person who was charged can turn around, and like I said, it's a double-edged sword, like justice is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a double-edged sword. You don't try to use it to hurt somebody, because it'll turn around and hurt you. And again, like I was talking, we were talking about the Hammonds, double jeopardy. That's what this clause is, the double jeopardy clause. And you can't be held twice to account for any one event. And man, you talk about spitting on our Bill of Rights and spitting on the Fifth Article, spitting on procedural due process, spitting on them people because they shouldn't have been in jail the first time because they were taken in under an admiralty jurisdiction and they're not in the Army and they're not in an active militia during time of war. So let's see. Next clause is, nor shall be compelled in any case to be a witness against himself. And, I mean, we see this all the time. I mean, what's a piss test? A piss test, if it's against the law to do drugs, and you're telling me that as a condition of my job that I have to pee in a bottle, I mean, you have no evidence of it. You're not making any accusation. You just want to look at my piss to see if you can find an evidence of anything that I might have put in my body, which is really none of your goddamn business. I mean, if you want to fire somebody for, look at the before all this came along. If you were incompetent in your job, if you were insubordinate to your boss, if you were just an asshole, you got fired for being an asshole, for being insubordinate, for not doing your job. And that could count for anything if you showed up drunk or you showed up impaired and you just weren't doing your job. This was totally unneeded. This was to get the precedence across about looking in people's piss and invading our privacy at the most basic level. Where's your body? But, when the piss test first came up, man, it was immediately challenged under the Fourth Article, that it was seizing your property without due process of the law, without satisfying the conditions of the Fourth Article. And as soon as I heard it, I go, bullshit, that is not what it should be challenged under. Because, of course, the court came back and said, it's just piss. And, I mean, it's like your garbage. It has been a job of the attorneys to tear apart the Bill of Rights and try to find a way through it and around it. But, I mean, it isn't going to fly because the Fifth Article, I mean, it takes care of it. Because the bottom line is you can't ask me to take a piss test. Why? Because is drugs against the law? So you're wanting me to confess to a crime? Can't do it. And that's how it should have been challenged. And that's how it should have been struck down. Not to mention that it should have never entered into the common law. I mean, this is government policy, illegal, legislated policy that is being inflicted upon the people. You got the state, the federal government can't say, oh, well, we decided that people need to be piss tested because the insurance companies want it. Tough shit. If you want my piss, even in the common law, you're going to have to go through a court case. You're going to have to go through a jury, and a jury's going to have to say, well, you got to give him a bottle of your piss. And that's what it would take to get a bottle of piss, honestly, from a United States national without violating his or her rights, period.
Henry?
Yes, sir.
Now that I'm 56, you know what my piss test is?
Can you do it, huh?
Can I get up? It's when I get up in the morning and make sure that my bladder still works.
Yeah, I figured that much. No kidding. Let's see what we're... And of course, you know, we've even had instances talking on this compelled... to be witness against oneself. It's been like a year since we talked about it, but I'll be surprised if it isn't still going on up there in Chicago. I mean, they're torturing people, and we know about it. And, you know, with Dirty Harry, it started, to get people, that dang Bill of Rights, and people are getting away with that, all these terrible things, hurting kids and stuff. Dirty Harry beat the hell out of him to get that information, but we should be able to use it in a court. Because, man, look at that lowlife that he was beating that information out of. And look at the good it did, that beating it. I mean, this is how they sold it to the people in this country. It was John Wayne. It was Clint Eastwood. And, you know, all these violations right there. And it was a good thing, man, because all these people are getting away with hurting little children and all these terrible things. It's like we talk about them going into the city and finding that apartment with the little children defecating in the floors and eating, inhumane conditions, and then giving themselves a bunch of authority over children. And as soon as they get it, they never cared about the children in the inner city to start with. It was just a avenue to gained some power that they could take out into the suburbs where people had money and you could empty their pockets, threaten them, and, you know, make them jump through hoops for you with your newfound power. And still, again, violations of the Bill of Rights. And, you know, people will talk about the contract, you know, you went and got a driver's license, you contracted here, you contracted there with the government, and that's how you became an agent of the government, and it's all right for them to take you into the Admiralty. Well, no, it is not. I mean, that argument will not hold water, and any logical thinking person knows it, because the Ninth Article says explicitly, you cannot create any power with the Constitution that violates the Bill of Rights. Now, every contract that the government would make or could make, or any state, or even any privateer operating as a corporation in this country, the only contract they could make would have to be on the authority of the state. First, the authority of the county they were in, the authority of the state they were in, and eventually back to the Constitution, which is the authority for all these things to exist. So all authority flows from the contract known as the Constitution, and that authority that they're trying to say that, oh well, because you signed this driver's license, I can violate your rights, take you into a military court. You're almost like a soldier. Bullshit. Because that contract can't exist. It's like the 14th Amendment. Under the 14th Amendment, you're subject to the government. It said, well, that can't exist either, because there would have had to be an authority to create it. And the claim was that they created it through constitutional means. Well, the Constitution has the Bill of Rights attached to it. And the Bill of Rights, Ninth Article, says you can't create no such power. It's never been possible. Even when Abraham Lincoln declared the first martial law, it was in direct violation of the People's Bill of Rights. And that's why the Southerners were fighting them, because that was the first grab at the Bill of Rights to remove it. And out of that, I mean, all of the people killed in that war, what was the end result? Was the 14th Amendment. Which is a violation of the People's Bill of Rights at all. And let's go here. Nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of the law. And that's pretty goddamn clear. Due process of the law is described in the Bill of Rights at every juncture. I mean, we started with an indictment here, but we went back to the fourth article. How did you get to the point of an indictment? It took sworn testimony, and it wasn't just, I got a hot tip, so we kicked your door in and shot your dog, raped your wife, and stole your children from you.
Henry, Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Hey, yeah, just before you get to going to break here, I just wanted to say that your last statement regarding the, get a license, you know, then you become a, you know, you contract with the government, so basically you're under their jurisdiction. Well, the Ninth Article forbids that. Well, doesn't that also cover the 14th as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if they cannot, just keep it in your mind. Keep it simple. They cannot create a power that takes away a right. Oh, we got this contract that the government made with your money, and if you want to go be able to go down your road, you have to sign this contract and give up all of your rights to go down the public roads. No, I don't, but I will sign it because I'm under a condition of coercion. I will put that I am under duress because you're pointing frickin' guns at me when you say it, and I will go down that road, but it doesn't, the power isn't legitimately there, and we both know it.
Is that where force majeure comes in right there?
Exactly. Where force majeure comes in, Katie. And we're going to finish up on the fifth article here, and this is one of the trickier clauses in the due process clause. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Now, we've seen Keystone, members of a foreign nation, nationals from another country, come in and say that they can just take our property here in the United States under eminent domain. That's what it is. Eminent domain. I'm having trouble saying it because I'm a lot of thoughts going through my head here. Now, see, what this was supposed to be, I mean, for the forts and what might have you, as this country was being secured, the government might want to take a fort, but how would this work in the common law, you say? Because government agents can't go into the common law, can they? No, they can't. So if you were going to take somebody's private property, it would take a private individual in that area who's seen a threat like the Indians or a foreign power coming into the country, and that person would have to take that person into court because government can't do it. Government has no authority inside our common law courts. Their jurisdictions just do not mix. And when they come into contact with one another, the superior jurisdiction is the common law, is the people's law. So the Keystone would not be happening, okay? The government's never had no power just to seize. You have a reason this is a part of your procedural due process is because you get the whole process here. It isn't the government, well, the government sit down and they decided that, yeah, they're going to need to take your property here for the Keystone Corporation or you know, one of their the people that registered as a corporation in the United States for their private enterprise, and you know, a pipeline, a road, what might have you, a railway. This is just, this, these were seizures without due process of the law, because before this, your property could be taken. Before it can be taken, 12 of your peers have to say it can be taken, not the government, because that would be stepping outside the common law, and that would be a dictatorship, which the Bill of Rights forbids. So if Keystone, I mean, if they wanted to try to take your property, they sure could. They could go down to the local judge there where you live, and they could say, we want to put a pipeline. I mean, they could put it through and swear an affidavit. They want to put a pipeline. The judge goes, sorry, you have no standing in this court. You're not an American national. Bye. And even if the government itself, like I said, wanted to, you know, for unless, you know, they've done so much under emergency powers, haven't they? If it was a time of invasion, I mean, it would get a little, this is one of the clauses that would get a little blurry, but I guarantee you before they could take that that property from you, you have the right to that jury. You have a right to that jury, a jury of your peers deciding it. The government has no authority to take your property away. Only a jury of your peers. And this is where this, I mean, this goes head on into what they're trying to do here in this country. They're claiming total authority over every piece of land across this continent, and it just ain't so. The Constitution limits them to forts and necessary buildings. I mean, you could say a highway. You might, you know, get away with a highway. We need a highway to defend the country properly. But
in the post office.
And a post office. There you go, brother. But each parcel of land is another trial. Each parcel of land you try to take from an individual, that individual is guaranteed by the Bill of Rights the due process of the law. And we're going to get more into the process when we get into the Sixth Amendment, because I mean the Sixth Article, because it contains a lot of procedural due process, just like the Fifth does. But I mean, it would start with a filing. I mean, it isn't that we're going to go file here in the Admiralty Court, and we're going to summon you to defend your property in the Admiralty Court against the government. You have no authority to summon me, government. I'm not in your army, and I'm not one of your agents. And if you say you've got some contract that removes my right, well, I tell you it can't exist because of the Ninth Article. The Ninth Article says no such authority can exist in the United States. So like I'm, you know, this, they've been doing this eminent domain. They've even taken, you know, people's houses and stuff to build malls and what might have you for supposed corporations inside this country. They cannot do it. It's all been a violation of the Fifth Article. It has been a violation of the due process, period. There was no juries. And you cannot have your, I mean, it makes it clear here that it has to be a jury. You have to have your jury. Your right to a jury has to be satisfied, or you cannot have property removed from you. The only ones who can remove property from an American national is another American national through the common law procedures, which are outlined in our Bill of Rights.
Hey,
and,
Henry?
Yes, ma'am.
When you were talking about, like, the piss test issue and all that,
mm-hmm.
and I would have honestly thought it was, I can see where you're saying the Fifth Article, that's where it's being violated. You would have argued on the Fifth. Would it not have been the Fourth and the Fifth?
Oh, yeah. It would have been procedural due process. Period. The Bill of Rights at all. If you want my piss, there's one way you can get my piss legally. You have to file under the Fourth Article. You have to get maybe you're claiming I owe you some piss. I don't know. I mean, this is what we're talking about here. Are you talking? You want my piss for a crime I committed or for a damage I done? If you're going to say it's for a damage I done, the only way you can get my piss is to say Henry owes me some piss, and this is why, and here's my two affidavits to that fact. And then that would be a civil action. I would answer, I owe you no piss. You don't own my piss, and I owe you no piss. And then we would go on to the jury trial, and the jury would decide if I owe you any piss or not. For each piss test, this would be necessary. Make sure you understand that. As far as if, Henry, he pissed on my fence. I need his piss for evidence. You could make a charge of me pissing on your fence. But if it turned out that I didn't piss on your fence, and I could be compelled to piss to see if it was my piss on your fence, if there was a way to tell my piss from another person's piss, it would be evident to a jury of common people in the common law, then you could say, well, you could compel me to piss. But you would have to have a charge. You would have to have some compulsory element involved to make me piss anywhere. Just to come up and say, well, everybody in America who wants a job, you got to piss in a jar. No. Because
you were saying originally when you were bringing this up that
about the crime
when it first came up.
Yeah.
Pardon?
About being a crime.
No, when this first came up about. Mm-hmm. When it was argued
mm-hmm.
in court, and now we know it was an admiralty court at
mm-hmm.
that point, or whoever did this, the
mm-hmm.
Supreme Court, and you said they argued under the Fourth Article, and you said, well, they should have argued it under the Fifth, and I'm saying I understand they don't have any place in our lives, but I'm saying just that. Example right there, should it not have been argued under the Fourth and the Fifth?
Well, it should have never been argued at all. You had to bring me into the admiralty to even argue it. But if my employer walks up to me and says, piss in this jar, I say, piss on you. And you try to punish me for refusing to piss in a jar. Well, then I'm going to take you to court and I'm going to take your business away from you. You can't make me piss in a jar. You can't do it. And you know the argument.
I hear you, but then, okay.
Keep going.
A stupid question because they've already done it.
Mm-hmm.
Too many people have to take a piss test.
They don't have to take a piss test at all.
They don't have to. You know, I guess if they don't want the job, you're right.
Well, yeah, but you cannot see the not having the job. That's called coercion. That is somebody committing coercion upon you. I want you to piss in this jar so I can see what you had for breakfast or what you did. No, you can't do that. That's an invasion of my privacy. You can get me to piss. You better have a damn good reason. Like I said, I pissed on the guy who was murdered. Whoever murdered him pissed on him. We want your piss to prove that you pissed on him. I don't even have to offer it up then now, do I?
Right.
Because that would be an admission of a crime, and I don't have to give any evidence against myself. So there is no situation if a person tried to coerce me like that and, said, I'm already working for the guy. And then this policy comes into play, and they say, well, if you want to keep your job, you're going to piss in this and let it be tested for drugs. Go ahead.
And I think that's the fine line between, they have all this marijuana legalization. Well, that's fine. They can't just throw you into a cage right away, but, it doesn't say anything that if your employer or the corporation wants to give you a piss test, there has to be some, it has to go all the way across the board.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going to leave.
The thing is, the ones that have to comply that have got this together, what are they? They're government agents. They're incorporated with the government. Those are government agents. They have no authority over you outside of being government. They're government agents in their intercourse with the government, and they're trying to make you a part of their property, I suppose, and telling you that, the insurance agent, I can get a lower insurance rate if I make all you people piss in this bottle. Well, no, ain't going to do it. That's a violation of my privacy. You have no right to look at my piss, no more than you have a right to look in my diary or anything else to see what I'm doing or what I'm thinking or what I'm eating or anything else. If you want to fire me because I have failed in my job because I'm not doing a good job, fire away. Even at that, if you because you're getting into the corporation thing, there should be no corporation in free enterprise in this country. That's what they did, man. They took the free enterprise away from us. Got these vulture capitalists in here called, it's capitalism. It's a real good thing. You get to capitalize. Capitalize is taking advantage, people. That's what that word means. It wasn't what we were guaranteed. We were guaranteed free enterprise. That means we could do business with one another unfettered by any government or any kind of rules or regulations other than what we imposed upon ourselves. And if we wanted to do business with somebody, we did business with somebody. If they did something that just struck us bad as in our own personality, we just didn't want to do business. We weren't under no obligation to do business with anybody. It's like making the cake for the queers. Go ahead.
I don't see how people can even show up at work most of the time without being on drugs. Do you know that most of your roads and freeways that you drive down through in Las Vegas have been designed on the CAD system by a guy that was on OxyContin, painkillers, and Ambien?
Well, I go further than that. I think about the two world wars where all these people were slaughtered and all the people conducting them at the top were drunk the whole goddamn time, weren't they? But it's a bad thing for me to drink or get buzzed or on anything. But these people who are making decisions of life and death for literally millions of people, they were all drunk. Anyway, they showed it on the old movies. Remember, it was one of those cool things that you watched as a child. You know, the higher ups in the military and the people in the government back during World War I, World War II, chugging down the liquor. I mean, if anything impairs judgment more than liquor, I'd like to know what it is.
Yeah, Henry?
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about, you know, property and personal property and stuff, and I received this letter today from our county that it's a property questionnaire,
mm-hmm.
and they're wanting me to submit to it, which I'm not gonna, but they want to know how many bathrooms I have, do I have a fireplace, do I have ABC. They want to know everything about my home.
I would send to them a response saying, do you have some order from a court, from a common law court, to ask me these questions? I mean, I just put none of your damn business.
And just go on and send it back like that?
Yeah, I would put...
Freaking business, dude. Stay out of my... And it says data collector, and then it's got parentheses with an S, plural. Okay.
Did any of you read the questions on the Census Bureau?
I did, right. Yeah, that's what I'm... well, there you go. I mean, that's what I'm saying. And it says, data collectors will be out to review and take pictures in your area during the next few months.
I would tell them...
The review is to meet the state of Kansas requirement of an annual 17% review of properties in Sherman County, Kansas. To verify the information in our system is up to date, we request that you complete the following information below. Your cooperation in furnishing the correct information is appreciated. And then they want it in 10 days, and they want to know, you know, I got the main floor, basement, and other. They want to know about, do I have sheds, grain bins, all this bullshit. I'm serious.
I hear you. My answer would be the only way you're going to get any of my personal information is through a subpoena through a common law court. I'm an American national. Have a nice day.
Katie.
No, that's Misty.
Targeted.
Misty.
Now.
That's Misty.
You might want to say, I choose silence and claim the fifth.
No, I mean, I've just never seen this, and I think it's kind of strange.
Well, you know, they're doing inventory for the Chinese who are going to come in and take it all from you.
Yeah, right.
They got to know what they're selling. Well, yeah, you think I'm kidding?
No, I mean, I really don't. I mean, it basically is going into detail, like half baths. Do I have toilets in the sink, which is a half bath, or full, or a fireplace? A wood, or a prefab, or a pellet, or a gas, and... What type of roof do I have?
Well, the kind of little survey that once the people went into the wilderness and cut out little towns and stuff, and then the land agents came from England to take it all away from them, that's the kind of little surveys they did. And they would offer it up for sale after the people had went out and blazed it under the guise that if you went out and blazed it and settled it, it belonged to you. But this has been going on from the East Coast, and it's already, you know, across the nation, and it's just getting worse every day. If they want to know these things, they want it for taxation or else for sale. What else would you want that information for?
Yeah, but, you know, too, at the same time, Henry, it's going, you know, I mean, piss on this letter as far as that goes. But they're going, we're sending these information Nazis out, data Nazis, and we're going to be taking pictures of your shit.
Well, I'd be out there taking pictures of them, tit for tat. So, and to, they ask you what you're doing, say, I'm identifying communists. I'm writing a book.